We are in the middle of Mishlei, the end of the 27th chapter. Believe it or not, I believe we're going to try to finish 27 today. And that means we have 28, 29, and 30 before we get to Ishus Chayil. Something to look forward to. I am thinking about a program. Did I tell you about this idea yet? I want to do something special for Ishus Chayil. It's a big project, so I don't know if it's going to come to fruition, but I'm thinking we spend one class on every pasuk. Focus on one pasuk a class. Have them sort of dedicated to different women. Maybe people will sponsor. Maybe we'll make a book out of it. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking along those lines. Get a sponsorship. Put a book together in honor of the women of our lives. Stuff like that. Gil would love that. Yeah. Okay. So keep that in mind. But we've got a few chapters to go until then. I say I would like to start that after Sukkot next year, maybe. But I don't know. We'll see what the timing goes like. But today we are on Chaf Zion, Chaf Aleph, I believe. Did we do Chaf? I don't know if we did Chaf last week. Let me look. Yeah, we did do Chaf. Okay, so we'll do Chaf Aleph. Chaf Aleph, it's interesting, the English side of the Art Scroll Mishlei splits the psukim up differently than the Hebrew is actually split up in the actual psukim. So it's kind of interesting. But we're going to do 27-21. Chav Zayin, Chav Aleph. Matzreif lakesef v'chor lazav, lefi ish v'ish lefi mahalalo. This last part, at least, v'ish lefi mahalalo, is actually a well-known phrase. We'll get to the more well-known use of that phrase in a second. But matzreif lakesef v'chor lazav, if you will, a refining pot is for silver, and a crucible is for gold. I think on the basic level, what this is saying is you have different utensils which are used for different things. Rashi says, "Kli asoy litzrof kasef va'akor asoy livchon zav, v'ish nitzaref umitchashev lefi mahalalo." And a person, just like gold is refined through the refining pot, gold is refined through the crucible, and silver is refined through the pot, meaning, when you get to when you put these materials, or what we think is the materials, in these pots, so then you can distill the true metal. I don't know what is. I once watched a few years ago. There was this YouTuber that picks up scrap metal and refines it down in like a crucible and reshapes the leftover precious metals that are in it. Mm-hmm. When you burn these metals so hot, you know, you get like scraps from, he used to take apart like car engines that were just thrown out. You take these scraps and you boil them like really hot temperatures. So then the different metals like dissociate. Yeah, right. And you can get the true silver out of it. And the other like either garbage metal or something like floats to the top. Yeah. And he would skim off the top and then he would reform like the silver. It was fascinating how he did it. Just like in his own garage. It was kind of like dangerous. But either way, he would like pour this burning hot liquid silver into like a mold of some kind. And then he would have like these gold bars and these silver bars, whatever they're called, something. I forgot what they're called. Either way, pretty impressive stuff. And he kept track of like how much he had. And, you know, he was just taking garbage and refining it. Anyway, so that's what this is talking about. When you want to understand the true essence of a person. Mm-hmm. The true essence of a person is sometimes misleading, because the true essence of a person is oftentimes clouded or is covered up by the social pressures that they have. You want to know whether a person is a good person, but at the same time, every time you always see them, now this is my interpretation of this, every time you see them, they're in public, or they're, you know, being watched, or they have some kind of consequence about whether they do something good or they don't do something good. Mm-hmm. Right? If I were to ask, you know, my kids' teachers, do they behave? They say, yeah, they behave relatively, you know, whatever. Yeah. But at the same time, is that a great barometer of whether, I mean, it could be, you know, really, you know, troublesome kids will misbehave even in class. But kids that are, you know, people pleasers, So they might behave in class, but who knows at recess what they're going to act like. Meaning, when you have social pressures, you can't really understand the person. Social pressures are good for that. That can create an identity of a person, right? The same way that, you know, friends of mine went to their year in Israel, and they would learn from the morning until the nighttime. They would learn Torah. They would sit and learn Torah. They never did that in high school, but they did that when they got to Israel. Why? Because that's what everybody else was doing. That's what we paid, you know, to do here, right? So there's a certain social pressure. The question really becomes, what happens when they leave that environment, right? So there is somewhat of a controversial Rav. I don't know what he's up to recently, but Rav Bina, what's his first name? Aryeh Bina, maybe? Of Nativ Aryeh. And he's like a real, like, fireball. He really gets the most out of the guys, but he's from the old school. And he used to tell the guys that your year in yeshiva doesn't start until you leave. Your year in yeshiva doesn't start until you leave. Because that's really going to determine what the yeshiva experience was for you. You can't know whether the yeshiva actually worked unless you bring it home. Unless you, when you're outside of the environment. So the same thing here, that there are some people that, you know, it's hard to understand who they are. So what is one way that even though they're, you know, under these social pressures, you know, even though that's the case, how do you understand who they really are? So one version of this is Rashi. Rashi says, "V'ish nitzraf u'mitzchashev l'fi mahalalo al yidei shehabrios mahalalo soso b'masav atov." By other people saying things about this person. If those people are praising that person, so you get a better picture of who that person is. It's refining who they are. When you watch them, again, you can't really see it because who knows why they're doing what they're doing. But when you speak to a spouse, when you speak to a friend, when you speak to a colleague who sees them every day and sees them when their guard is down and knows who they really are and how they speak to them, so then you get a better picture of who they are. So nivchon l'rabim im tov im ra. You will have a better picture of who they are, just like the crucible refines the true essence of the material, right? You can get the gold, you can get the silver, you can get the true essence of the person. You get true essence of the material after you've refined it. So too, the person is refined by asking what other people think of him or her. But then comes the other explanation, the other interpretation of v'ish l'fi mahalalo. And this is such a beautiful insight from Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah is our long-lost friend. Rabbeinu Yonah stopped commenting on Mishlei somewhere around Perek Chaf Hei, Chaf Dalet maybe. And I'm not sure exactly why, but we did note that there was a distinction between the first 24 chapters and the last 8. But the point here is that Rabbeinu Yonah says, and again, I don't know where this is because he doesn't have commentary on this part, but Rabbeinu Yonah says that the ish l'fi mahalalo, you want to know the true essence of a person? Watch and listen to who they talk about. Not l'fi mahalalo, how they praise him, but how he praises others. Yeah. Not how he praises others, but who he praises. Ish l'fi mahalalo, those who he praises. When you sit at the dinner table, who's the person talking about? Who do they bring up in conversation? Are they bringing up some celebrity for, you know, some ridiculous movie that they made or some ridiculous tabloid that they read? Or are they bringing up the soldiers of the IDF?
Or are they bringing up praising themselves?
Okay, they could praise themselves also. That's another way to judge them, sure. Or are they praising, you know, are they praising a friend who did a mitzvah that day? Are they praising, you know, someone who davened that day so nicely? Are they praising the courage someone had? Right? What are they praising and who are they praising? That will be the greatest indicator of what they really believe. Nobody volunteers a praise for somebody, you know, voluntarily if it's not what they believe. So that's perhaps the greater way to distinguish or identify the person's true essence, not by what they're doing. What they're doing, again, can be influenced by different social pressures. But when they're on their own, and they don't have to be talking, but there they are, they're talking, and they're speaking. Did you see what so-and-so did? Who's so-and-so? Is that so-and-so someone that we, you know, we value as a righteous person? Or is that so-and-so someone who's, you know, just a, you know, pop culture icon who doesn't necessarily live by the values of Torah mitzvos? So you can understand a lot about a person based on who they praise, what are the conversations around the Shabbos table? What are the discussions in the WhatsApp chat? So what are they most involved in? And I think that's a real, unfortunately, it's a real indicator now that we have social media, and a person basically thinks they can say whatever they want to, whenever they want. You can really get a picture of who that, and I don't really frequent Facebook, but anytime that I end up on there because someone sends me something or whatever, so it doesn't take a long time to figure out what a person is, what they care about. What are the things that you're posting on your Facebook page? Like, no one is asking you to post these things, and you feel the need to voluntarily talk about this. Well, that means that's what you care about. Is that person ever, is that person talking about righteousness? Or is he talking about tabloid culture? Is he talking about, the latest celebrity gossip, or political gossip or something like that?
Or talking about themselves.
Or about themselves. I guess people probably talk about themselves online also. I would think that Twitter might be a better platform to understand these things. Because that's usually not really about yourself and your life. Sometimes it is. But it's mostly you're responding to news articles and stuff like that. But either way.
Instagram.
So Instagram is more about yourself, right?
Not necessarily.
No?
People post other things, but then they're posting comments. Comments to...
Oh, you see what they're commenting on? Okay. Yeah, so again, Ish Levim Mahalalo, maybe in yesteryear, in the times of Mishlei, you had to actually hear the person. Nowadays, you can just look up their social media accounts and see what they choose voluntarily to talk about. And that will be the greatest indicator about who they are and what they care about. Okay, moving on. Im tichtosh es ha'avil. This is a very interesting pasuk. If you crush the fool, a different kind of fool, avil here is not a typical kind of fool. This is the type of fool that doesn't care. It's an ideological foolishness. Meaning he specifically doesn't care to learn about Torah mitzvah, doesn't care about becoming better, doesn't value the wisdom of others. So even if you were to browbeat, as they say figuratively, im tichtosh es ha'avil, ba'machtesh, besoch harifos ba'ale, ba'eli, with a pestle, I think that's what that means. Even if you were to put him in a mortar and pestle and crush that person, lo sasor me'olav yivatzo, they're not going to change. Now, obviously, this is figurative. I think it could be, at least in times of Mishlei, it could be somewhat literal in terms of sort of discipline and not necessarily, a mortar and pestle, but in terms of they used to discipline through physical force. If a person is dedicated to foolishness, they are committed to not being shomer Torah mitzvos. So you're not going to browbeat them. Now I think we look at this pasuk in the 21st century in a different light than Shlomo Melech meant it. Shlomo Melech meant it in the sense that this person is going to stick to their, ideology or lack thereof, and they're not going to be better. It doesn't matter how much you hate them. That's the kind of person they are. We look at it and say, if you want to change people, you can't do it by browbeating them. You can't do it by physical force. It happens to be that in yesteryear that was the mode of greatest success. At least that's what they thought. But certainly today, this methodology doesn't work. And this pasuk happens to coincide or support, corroborate that you can't hit people and expect them to be better. If anything, hitting them is going to turn them, back towards what they're, what they're doing.
They might do what you want for the moment.
Right. In the immediate aftermath of the punishment, they'll do what you want. But the truth is that it's not really going to bring them into any ideological clarity. It's only going to make things more confusing, more spiteful afterwards.
I think it's interesting the word machtesh, because I know the word is crater.
A crater is machtesh.
Yeah, machtesh ramon. We have our own
mach. Okay, right, it's a crush. Uh-huh, interesting. Interesting modern application of it.
Well, yeah. The verb is lichtosh, then, isn't it?
Lichtosh. Right.
Yeah. It's a crush. Now I know it.
And a water is like that, like a crater, it's a bowl,
yeah,
isn't
that's
it?
The big
right.
Right.
Uh-huh. The crushing of a mortar, yeah. Okay, interesting. So Machtesh betoch harifos ba'eli. You cannot knock the foolishness out of a person. They have to come to it on their own. And we've talked about this before, but, you know, as much as you can discipline and discipline and discipline, as much as you can teach, you can teach, you can teach, the greatest teaching is done when you bring the person to the realization themselves, that they can figure it out, that they can understand it. It's sometimes very hard, especially as a parent or a teacher, to not hold people's hands, right? You want them to get it right. You know, I'm doing my homework with my kid, and you know he's doing, you know, whether it is Hebrew reading or math or whatever, and you want to just tell them, no, that's not it. You have to do, you know, look at the mistake you made over here, and then you sort of hold yourself back, and you have to like allow them to make mistakes, mm-hmm. allow them to feel it themselves. Because the more you force education, now obviously you have to teach them something if they don't know it, but the more you force the education, the less they'll actually learn it themselves, and the less it'll be part of who they are. The more it'll only be a product of your discipline, a product of your forcefulness. So in a less extreme way, you know, browbeating someone for their foolishness is never going to remove their foolishness. It's just going to, as Sarita said, temporarily, you know, temporarily fix the immediate problem. It's not going to fix who the person is. In fact, today, for sure, it'll make it even worse. And I think sometimes we don't even realize that we're using a crushing method. You know, when, you know, we discipline people and, you know, years down the road, you hear, you know, why didn't you do X, Y, and Z? Why aren't you Shomer Torah Mitzvos? Oh, because I had a Rebbe in third grade who used to scream at us. And I, you know, it turned me off or something, you know, something crazy like that. The Rebbe didn't mean anything nefarious about it. Of course, he wouldn't have done it if he knew that he had that influence on people. So I think sometimes here it's not just saying if you consciously decide I'm going to crush this person, but even if they happen to be crushed by you, you know, unwittingly, you didn't want it to happen. But lo sasor me'alav yivalto, it's not going to. Lo sasor me'alav yivalto means it's not going to go away, and in fact, it might even make it worse. Might even make it worse. I would say today it's an interesting way that the pasuk that Shlomo Melech says lo sasor me'alav. It's almost passive. The foolishness will not be removed from him. It doesn't say he won't remove his foolishness, right? It doesn't say lo sasor yivalto. It says lo sasor me'alav yivalto. Right, as if to say there are forces that are happening to this person which are beyond his or her control, and sometimes that means that you're doing it unknowingly, and they're being affected unknowingly, and subconsciously they are being influenced for years to come from the way that you discipline or guide them. The next few psukim to end off the chapter are actually, you know, one lengthy analogy about knowing your sheep. I was talking today, there's a guy in Kansas who, actually he might be in Missouri now, I can't remember, but he always, you know, tries to stay in touch with me. Could be because he lives basically in the woods by himself on a farm, not with the wild woods, but he was in Kansas City when I was there, and he was trying to convert and whatever, COVID, business went down. He bought a piece of farmland, and he's living in Yehopetzville, middle of nowhere. And he's telling me all about his plans. This guy can talk forever. Again, I don't think he has a lot of like social outlets, so he calls me up, and he's telling me, oh, I found these other people that want to convert to Judaism. We're going to start a base medrash program. I'm like, okay, sounds good. You know, none of them are Jewish. The guy says, you know, one of them is Jewish. I said, why, you know, what gives you that information? Well, he converted. I say, he converted. Oh, what's his story? He says, well, his mother was Jewish, but his father wasn't. So I'm like, what? So why did he convert? I don't know. He just didn't like, give me these, you know, he said to him, I think they're Orthodox. He said, if they're living in the middle of nowhere with no shul and no minyan, they're not Orthodox. That's part of being Orthodox, unless you're a Chabad Shliach trying to like bring Jews back to the fold. Like, you're not moving to a place with no minyan. That doesn't, you know, you're not Orthodox. Anyways, this guy has his own thoughts. He's not Jewish either himself, but
no, but it sounds like the other one is.
The other one might be. I mean, he said he was Jewish. I don't know. You never know. People tell me that their parents are Jewish all the time. It's just not true. Either way. So he was telling me that he was on farmland and he had one farm and he sold it and he got, now he's on 40 acres. 40 acres, so much more room for his sheep to graze. And he got more sheep and now he says he can't travel because he has so many animals. So he can't even move back to the Jewish community if he wanted to. But I looked at these pasuk, I'm like, oh, this is why I talked to him today. You know, because the pasuk says, Yadoa teda pnei tzonecha. Know very well the faces of your sheep. It's a very interesting pasuk. Know very well the faces of your sheep. Now, might Shlomo HaMelech be talking about literal sheep? Yeah, he could be. But in the context that we've been discussing, right, the context of knowing a person, of disciplining another person, of last week being satiated by life, you know, and being an honest and sincere person. So in that context, it's hard to believe he's talking about literal sheep. Rashi says this is referring to students, teachers and students. I think it could be. I think
yeah,
it could
Rabbi,
be.
Yeah, I was going to say when you use the terminology sheep, you're talking about a rabbi and his flock, or a leader and his flock.
Right.
So I think that's the.
Yeah,
the kind of reference.
Right. That's definitely, I would say, the typical, you know, the conventional understanding of the analogy of sheep is, you know, someone who's leading others. Yeah. There are some who explain this literally. There are some commentaries that say this is talking about sheep. You just like we were talking about business, we're talking about sheep. I don't know. But yeah, I think you're right in the sense that most would probably see this as an analogy of leadership. So in that context of leadership, Yadoa teta pnei tzonecha, know their faces. Now, I haven't seen any commentaries that say this, but the Gemara, I believe in Sanhedrin, says that Hashem created the world, and kishem she par tzufehem shonim, kach deoseim shonim, that just like Hashem created all of us to look different, we all think differently too. So I think of that pasuk. I think of that Gemara apropos this pasuk. Yadoa teda pnei tzonecha, shis libcha la'adarim, that know very well the faces of your flock, meaning not just literally their faces. You know, extending the analogy, maybe the sheep, the differentiation is their faces. They might also have different personalities, but certainly when it comes to sort of the nimshal, as we say, I don't know what's the word for nimshal in English. There's got to be a better word for nimshal. The analogy, and then the. What's the other one? You know, where you're bringing it back into reality. The nimshal. It is analogous to, you know, I don't know. But what is the non-analogy part? The nimshal. That which is being analogized. There's got to be a word for that. Cherno, you're my linguist.
Analogized is a word.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. We need a word. Where's Joseph when you need him? Anyways. Yeah. So either way, so Pnei Tzonecha, the Nimshal, I think, is referring to a leader knowing each and every person. The Pasuk says in Pinchas that when Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem that he wants someone, Asheruach Elokim Bo, Chazal say, Asheruach Elokim Bo means he has the spirit of Hashem who knows each and every individual's inclinations, who knows the differences between their personalities and their proclivities, their skills, the greatest, you know, career for them, the greatest position or environment that they need, right? They know people. If the leadership knows individuals, so then they can be a good leader. But if you're going to only know, I guess, a general policy, but you don't know each individual sheep, if you don't know how to lead each and every one, so then ultimately you're not going to serve almost anyone because you'll have, on a grand scale, you have a general trend towards success, and if it's a business, that's fine. But when it comes to real leadership, to lead each and every individual to their greatest personal, you know, their greatest personal success, so you have to really know them. Rashi says, "Al yiklu beinecha lihisbonin bam tamid mahim tzrichim." Don't take lightly the importance of understanding what they need at all times, each and every individual. However, and this is the interesting follow-up on the pasuk, shis libcha la'adarim, but also set your heart to the flocks. Now, I don't know exactly what this means. Rashi doesn't say it, but Mitzvah Zevah says, it means the same thing. It means the same thing. You know, having attention to the faces of the sheep, and giving attention or set your heart to the flocks, says Mitzvah, they're the same thing. I don't think they're the same thing. I think as a productive leader, you have to have your eyes on the trees and the forest. You have to know the people, you have to know the persons and the people. You have to know the individual, each and every one of them, and you also have to know the general trend of the group. And I think that's what it's like. Adarim, I think, is a group of sheep, right? So I think that's a purposeful distinction that Shlomo Malka is drawing. I'm trying to see if anyone talks about this.
Is Shlomo Malka saying it all is better to be part of the flock or part of the leader?
He's not commenting on that.
Yeah.
I think he's just talking about when you are a leader, however you get there. So here, the Art Scroll footnote says, applying this comment to education, teachers should group students according to their ability so that better students will challenge and weaker ones will not be overwhelmed. Meaning, know each and every individual and then break them up at least to similar groups. And that will that way they can benefit each other. Okay, that's a nice one. However, then we find the next part, the next psukim. The next psukim make it sound almost like that was only, you know, a pretense for a specific, or the reason for that pasuk is for the next pasuk. Why is it that you should pay such close attention to the sheep and overall to the flocks? Ki lo le'olam chosen. Because it is not forever strength. Strength is not going to last. Meaning like this. Not every sheep is always going to be able to tend to themselves. Not every sheep is going to be able to find the pasture. Not every sheep is going to be able to find the water. As we know from Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, in the Medrash about Moshe, you know, carrying the sheep back to get water, the Tanchuma there in Parsha Shmos. Kilolo olam chosen. They are not always going to be so. They're not always going to be so strong. V'im nezer ledor vador. Can you translate that for me, based on your translations? What do you have, Sarita? The end of 24?
A crown for all generations.
What is it?
Or a crown for all generations.
Okay, I guess start at the beginning, maybe.
Your property does not last forever. Or a crown for all generations.
Your property doesn't...
For property does not last forever.
For property doesn't last forever.
That doesn't seem to make sense.
I'm trying to make it make sense.
It's a very good translation.
I think what he's saying is Nezer is a crown. I want to give my interpretation of this. I think what it's saying is you have to pay close attention to take care of your sheep because you never know what might happen. Right? You might think that the sheep or any other, you know, individual students. Child, you might think that, oh, they're doing okay on their own. Mm-hmm. I can let them go on their own and now they'll be okay. I can see them walking towards the pasture over there. I can see them walking towards the water. They'll be okay. But Shlomo Melech is saying, you never know what's going to happen. Ki lo le'olam chosen. It's not always necessarily going to be so guaranteed that you'll have your strength or that they'll have their strength. V'im nezer ador vador. And you're not always going to have the crown or the wealth all the time. Meaning, you can't just have, you know, all the right resources and assume it's all going to be good. In connection with the previous pasuk, I'm thinking about it now. I want to say that this is actually a commentary on proper parenting or teaching, either one. I think sometimes we use shortcuts. We use shortcuts in our parenting or use shortcuts in our teaching to the extent that we could, you know, show a video or send someone, you know, an article which gives them the same information that we could have given them. So we assume that's going to be good enough. We get, we get toys for our kids so that they'll leave us alone. and we don't have to interact with them directly. All the meanwhile, at some point, that information is not going to be good enough. And it's a bit of a stretch, but lola olam chosen, the im nezer l'dor vador, you're not always going to have those resources to constantly, you know, feed them and make them busy with the information. Sometimes you need yadoa teda pnei tzonecha. You need to know them individually. You have to know them, you know, create a relationship with them. Ki lola olam chosen, you can't just rely on all your resources that's going to do good enough for you. Whether it's your parenting, you know, why doesn't my kid love me? I give him the best birthday presents every day. I give him the best, you know, I let him watch movies all the time. I give him the food he wants. Well maybe he just wants you. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he just wants you. He doesn't want all the stuff you're giving him. I think that's becoming more and more difficult today. And obviously I'm guilty of it. I think we're all guilty of it in some ways.
Well, people have different learning styles, so an article might be good enough for one person, but another would need a one-on-one interaction or,
yeah, right. Yeah, person. That could be. But I think everyone. Yeah, no, there are definitely different. I happen to have read something recently that's all a farce. But okay, but it could be true. I personally feel it about myself. I think I'm better audioly than I am text. But yeah. Definitely visually. But the point is that everyone needs relationships within their education, right? I don't think anyone learns better without other people to ask questions to. I think some people can accumulate information, but they cannot sort of inculcate, you know, the information better without a person that can explain it to them, whatever. But I once told over a story a couple years ago. I think it was a drush I gave on Pesach. I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago. That there was a guy, I think I got this from David Pelkovitz. Very sad, but very informative, insightful story. And it was time for the Afikomen, right? Time to find the Afikomen. The father hid the Afikomen. This happened on the East Coast somewhere. And father hid the Afikomen. And obviously, whoever finds the Afikomen, you know, gets I think it was like a trip with dad. They get to go on a trip. And so there were little kids in the house. There was also a teenage girl. The teenager, when all the little kids went to go find the Afikomen, also left and went to get the Afikomen. And she found the Afikomen and came back. And the father was very upset. Like, don't you know the Afikomen is for kids? You know, why did you get the Afikomen? And she said, I just wanted to go on a trip with you without your phone. That's what she said to her dad. I just wanted some time with you and not with anyone else. I never get any time with you. So it was like one of these, you know, oh my gosh, what have I done moments for the dad. But I think that's, I think it is a stretch, but I think it's definitely relevant to the topic. You have to have face-to-face interactions with people. And even if you think you're giving them the gifts, kilo olam chosen, those gifts, that wealth is not going to work. Im nezer l'dor v'dor, are you always going to be using all these gifts to buy their favoritism? It's not going to work. I don't know. Take it or leave it. But next pasuk chavei gala chatzir v'nira deshe v'nesvu isvos harim. This is also in the same vein that sometimes the grass sprouts and it is plush. What is this? Sometimes grass sprouts and vegetation is seen. V'nesvu isvos harim. But sometimes nesvu, they're gone, they're gathered up. Isvos harim. You know, sometimes the pasture is lush and your sheep will be good. But in other times, even the grass of the mountainside will be gone. The mountainside, which is always very well irrigated and very lit, very well, you know, lit by the sun. So even then, even that can happen. Even that can be a drought, can be all gathered up. The point being, again, the resources might be depleted, and the only thing you'll have to sort of depend on are the relationships that you made. You're not always going to have those resources. You're not going to be able to keep them, you know, under lock and key, or you know, give them the gifts all the time. But you're still going to need to depend on those relationships to maintain, you know, a healthy connection to those students.
I also get a sense that there's a little bit of a, I don't know, despondency. It's like despite your best efforts, despite the best circumstances that you have for your sheep or your children,
right,
that things don't always work out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think you're saying that he's just saying you should know that as a warning type of thing?
Yeah, just be aware.
Be aware that it's not always going to be peachy. Not always going to be perfect. Okay, I hear that. I the reason that I'm explaining it in the context of know them is because the beginning of Pasuk Chav Dalet is ki. The word ki is like a because. It's explaining why Yadoa Teda, you have to get to know them. But I think you're right also that to the extent that it's...
Well, this phrase about the mountainside, you know, it's lush, it's getting all the rain,
right,
and yet...
It can also get bad. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think the question that he's addressing beyond that, I mean, not just alerting people to that possibility, but beyond that, it's like, what are you going to do when that happens? And I think if you have the Yodea Teda Pnei Tzonecha, if you have those relationships, so it doesn't matter if that happens. You know, even if the, you know, stuff hits the fan, as they say, and things get bad, at least you have each other, kind of thing. At least you have those relationships to sort of keep you through it. Yodea Teda Pnei Tzonecha, because sometimes even the mountainside doesn't have its grass. But yeah, the grass is not always greener. Yeah, something you can make more connections to other English idioms. But yeah, no, I think that's true. I think there's also an interesting sort of warning in what you're saying, Henry. There are interesting studies done about family narratives. Family narratives were once studied. How do we inform our children and our grandchildren about the family's history? I think it was like an interesting New York Times, or people like to talk about this study around Pesach time. I think I talked about it around Pesach time.
Which it's also is, a Rabbi Sacks thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I believe David Beshevkin, who runs a popular podcast called 1840 that I've quoted a few times, I definitely spotlighted it in my in the newsletter. But so he has a book called Synagogue, S-I-N, where he talks about failure in the Jewish community and how we have to sort of learn from it. And in the opening pages, he quotes this study. He talks about the greatest success or the greatest perseverance, which is measured in people, comes from those who have a family narrative of struggle and overcoming. As opposed to teaching,
probably,
you know, this is like, you know, I don't know if people, I'm sure people are aware of this, if not have experienced themselves, that, you know, some grandparents never liked to talk about what happened in Europe. Mm-hmm. They just never mentioned it. And that has sort of like a traumatic effect on the next generation, right? They live with that intergenerational trauma. It's like a new, you know, sort of well-known study about next generations after trauma and how they are re-experiencing it through their parents. That's one way of dealing with family history. Just don't talk about the bad stuff. We don't talk about what so-and-so did. We don't talk about what so-and-so went through. So that's one way of saying it. The other way is to only talk about the bad stuff. Oh, we've been so downtrodden, you know, you only say the Vihisha Amda part. Lavo Seinu V'lanu, not the Yatzilenu Miyadam part. You only talk about how everyone tries to destroy us. So if you only talk about the good stuff, or you only talk about the bad stuff, so then you're obviously going to get detrimental results in that next generation. That next generation, if they only ever hear about the good stuff, so when the bad stuff comes, it's gonna really hurt. And if you only talk about the bad stuff, so then you're gonna play victim your whole life. You're never gonna get off the couch. The best way is to have, I forgot what they call it, but sort of the, you know, the oscillating family narrative, that you talk about how things were difficult and we were able to overcome them. How grandpa went through the war and then he picked himself up when he got to America. So that narrative is the best narrative to give over to children, because what it gives them for their identity is things will be bad. As Henry was saying, things will be bad. The question is whether you get up afterwards. So whether or not he's giving us the solution here, I think, you know, it's definitely forewarning us that there are times that gala chatzar v'nira desha, that the land will be plush and you'll be able to live off that land and it'll be wonderful. But then also, v'nasfu isfos harim, even the mountainside is going to lose its pasture. Even the mountainside is not going to give you the resources you once had. And you have to be ready for that. So in my interpretation, Shlomo Melech is saying, Yadoa teda p'nei tzonecha, you better know the people around you so that when the mountainside goes bare, you'll have at least each other to rely on, to know what they need, to try to figure out what you can do to help them, as opposed to just relying on the resources and hoping that everything's going to turn out okay. Two more psukim that are similar, so we'll read them together. Kvasim lelevushecha u'mechir sada atudim v'dei chalev yizim lelachmecha lelechem beisecha v'chaim l'narosecha. Let me just read this in the article here. Let the lambs be your clothing, meaning use the lamb, use the sheep and its wool to clothe yourself, and let he-goats be as valuable as a field. He-goats be as valuable as a field. I'm not really sure what you're going to use them for in that way. Let me see. Oh, what is the difference between a field and movable property is endurance. What endures, right? So in the context of Chazal, the most valuable thing you can give another person is property. Property is not going anywhere, right? It's not going to just going to disappear. The sheep's going to die. Mm-hmm. But so here what it's saying is that first of all, use the wool for clothing, and you'll be good off. You'll be kept warm from your flock, and then also use the sheep as your field. Make sure that they continue to procreate. This is from the Mitzvot David, who explains that if you take care of the sheep, they'll continue to procreate, and you'll have more sheep that continue. So it's not enduring in the sense that the sheep are going to live forever, but at least your flock will live forever if you take care of them. The point here is, and then the next pasuk also, and the milk of the goats will suffice for your food and the food for your household and will give life to your maidens.
Oh, wait, you're saying, I think you replaced the word the goats with the word sheep. They're two different animals.
Well, if you look at the psukim, so the first pasuk is keves and the second pasuk is ezim.
Yeah.
So those are two different animals.
Yeah,
I think it's talking about different flocks. I think they're similar flocks. You could have goats and sheep together, can't you?
You get more from a sheep than you do from a goat.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, one, you get clothing, one, you get food.
And goats, you get meat.
But you need both.
Well, you have to kill them for that.
Yeah.
And cheese and stuff.
Yeah. They both give different resources,
well,
but similar.
Yeah, you
goats you don't won't give goat, you the okay. clothing.
Why does it specify he goats then? You need both male and female to produce.
Well, the female goats is your milk. The he goats don't give you anything but meat.
Well, I'm.
And working and procreation. Yeah, I don't know about the. I'm not a farmer or a shepherd, but.
And they use goats for skin.
Skins also, yeah. You can use them for a lot of different things. But the point here is, and this is again, this is could be literal, but as we mentioned before, it's most likely also an analogy.
I was just about to turn it off.
The analogy, which is about the teacher and student. So what does this mean? So if the goat or the sheep is producing the milk or the clothing, so what are we supposed to understand as the nimshal, the word that we don't know how to say in English, as the reality? What's the real life, version of that analogy? So the nimshal, I believe, and this I haven't seen anywhere, but I believe that what it means is you will be sustained by your students. In the same sense that you give to them and you're committed to taking care of them, you're getting to know them, etc. To the same extent that you're taking care of them, ultimately they'll take care of you. There's nothing like good nachas from a student. There's nothing like good nachas from a child, from a nephew, from a colleague that you helped bring out, you helped, develop them, you helped, in a time of need, and then you find them back on their own two feet, then you find them succeeding, developing properly, and becoming the person that you would always hope for them. So there's a tremendous nachas from that. There's a tremendous sustenance from that. I don't know what does the milk represent, what does the fleece represent, but the point is that it sustains you, right? That gives you purpose in life, and that gives you sort of figurative warmth. to make you feel like you've accomplished something, you did something right. And that kind of feeling is it can really sustain you for years. It sustains you, encourages you to continue doing it, encourages you to continue the work with other people. Unfortunately, this is how Hashem wants it to be. I don't know why, but unfortunately, you know, some of those dividends are paid way down the road. You don't even see them coming. I remember walking. I probably tell this story before. I remember walking once in Brooklyn, and some guy stops me. Didn't recognize him, wearing black and white, black pants, white shirt. And he calls out my name. I'm like, I don't remember you. Like, sorry, I don't remember who you are. And he says, I was at NCSY Colo. And we used to sit near each other. And you taught me X, Y, and Z. I don't remember even teaching him. And he said, now I'm, you know, learning in Landers, in yeshiva and college. And he had become like a real, like a yeshiva guy. He was a public school kid. I remember, the one thing I did remember him, he was like a drama guy. He like was in all the school's plays and he would sing and whatever. Public school kid devoted to, you know, being in drama. Ultimately, enrolled in Jewish schools. Ultimately went to yeshiva. And now is hopefully, I don't know where he is now. I haven't seen him in, 10 years, but hopefully now kept on that path. And, you know, that's a real, like, it makes you feel like there's something worthy to what you're doing. And even in the incriminate, not necessarily the big home run hitters, right? It's not just the people that you made into from, that's not just the only success is to feel satisfied by. Even, someone, felt inspired by a drasha or to learn something they never knew before, or is able to keep halacha better because they understood what you said. So that stuff is also very refreshing. And, I can only speak to rabbinic examples, but I'm sure in the nursing field, you have students that come in every July 1st and they have to learn how to do things and you teach them how to do things. And then a year later, you see them teaching somebody else. And it's like, your tutelage, lives on. And there's a real satisfying quality to that. So I don't know exactly how to translate the analogy into reality in terms of what's the wool that keeps you warm and what's the milk that sustains you. But I think in the same way that chayim l'narosecha, it gives life, it gives you life, it gives you purpose, it gives you strength to it encourages you to continue doing the teaching and the inspiring and you're just working. In whatever field that we are, we continue having that influence. Yeah, Henry.
The translation for Nimshal is moral or lesson.
No.
What's the moral or the lesson?
That's not the same word. I mean, I know what all three of those words mean. That's not what the Nimshal is, like the equation, right? The equal components of the analogy. Right? Like the sheep is the student. That's not a moral. That's the Nimshal, right? Part of the nimshal is that the sheep is the student. Now, there might be a moral lesson that comes out of the mashal.
That's just the translation.
You found that? Oh, okay. Yeah, so, I don't know. Speaking of satisfying, that didn't satisfy me. Anyways, Mirtz Hashem, next week we'll pick up with Perek Chav Ches. Perek Chav Ches.
I tried.
Yeah. Thanks, I appreciate the attempt.